Welcome back. You are listening to Nate the Hate on YouTube, iTunes, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. Be sure to like the video and subscribe if you haven't already. Ring the notification bell in the upper right-hand corner so you are notified each time a brand new episode goes live on YouTube. And today's episode is dedicated to Shamsa, who generously donated $100 to support the channel. And if you'd like to support the channel in any way, we have a Streamlabs link in our description below. Donate any dollar amount. Ask a question. We will answer it at the end of the episode. Donate $100 or more, and we will dedicate the episode to you. And today's episode is dedicated to Shamsa. And I'd like to welcome in my co-host, Modern Vintage Gamer.
Hello, Nate. It's great to be here. And looking forward to today's topic.
Yes. Last episode, we talked about the Nintendo Direct, or the rumors that Nintendo Directs cause in the industry, and how we see them referenced so frequently by websites, YouTube channels, and social media in general. And today we're going to talk about how some of that can be alleviated if game companies were simply more transparent with their marketing plans when it comes to directs or showcases, depending on the company that is being discussed. And one thing that we have seen in the last couple of weeks is that companies have announced plans to have events or showcases in the month of September or even at the end of August. And among these companies include Ubisoft, who is currently having a countdown to a September event where they have been teasing Assassin's Creed news as a potential thing there. And Disney just put out that they're going to have an event in early September where they can have a number of announcements regarding some of their IP. And this now leads us into the big three. And we're going to start with Nintendo, because Nintendo is always the company that the fans are most eager to get news from. And that's why we have those weekly, if not daily, Nintendo Direct rumors. And Nintendo is definitely a company that is renowned for their secrecy, be it software, hardware, and even their marketing plans. Nintendo likes to keep things close to the chest. And in June, their typical pattern of having an E3 presentation came around just, you know, like clockwork. But instead of being a general direct, it was a Nintendo Direct Mini partner showcase, which means it focused on third-party software for the Nintendo Switch. And some people were angry that we had a third-party showcase instead of a general direct where Nintendo would have had their own games being highlighted and headlined. Now, this is something that could have been alleviated potentially if Nintendo was transparent in their marketing plans, not only for June, but also for the future. So let's say we had the Mini Direct air as it did, MVG. Mm-hmm. But Nintendo, in a tweet, when they announced the partner, said, this is going to be a partner showcase, but we're going to discuss our own software later this summer in maybe their own presentations, like a Splatoon 3 dedicated direct, mm-hmm. or on Twitter, like we saw at Bayonetta 3 getting its release date. Had Nintendo communicated such plans at that time when the partner Mini was airing, would that have made you more accepting of a partner showcase? Or would it simply have felt like a band-aid of, well, Nintendo's not ready to communicate with us, and now they're just kind of giving us a little bit of expectation of what may be coming in the future, but they're not giving any specifics in terms of timing, just saying later this summer we will discuss more of our software with you across various forms of social media.
I think it's more of a band-aid, and I want to hear your take on this after I've said my thing, but, you know, there's some type of expectation. If you come out and say, we're going to show you this partner showcase, but stay tuned, we'll have more to show with our games, you know, over the summer or at the end of the summer, then there's that expectation that we're going to see that. Now, look, there's a pretty high likelihood that we're going to get a September Direct, a general Direct, or some type of Nintendo Direct in September that outlines what Nintendo is working on. But you're also kind of putting pressure on yourself, you know, because as we know, especially this year, we've seen so many games get pushed out to 2023, all these announcements on Twitter about games getting delayed and pushed and stuff. How do we know that, you know, Nintendo's games aren't getting pushed as well? And we never really know because they don't communicate that stuff unless it's, you know, something like Breath of the Wild 2 or something that, that has a lot of expectation and anticipation around it. So I think Nintendo, as far as the partner showcase, and even we can even talk about the Splatoon Direct as well that just happened where it was just announced. I think the way that they're handling the marketing around the way they're doing things is mostly the right move. I'm not saying it's perfect. I do think there is probably, you know, some communication that they should let the fans know about the roadmap of things. But I think in general, they're doing the right thing, not kind of putting themselves in a corner saying that, hey, we're going to show our stuff later on, unless that later on is just a date or an open-ended date that doesn't really have a particular month of the year or something like that, or even a particular season. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, look, I think Nintendo's played it pretty well. And even in the last episode, we talked about this, you know, they only can really show us what they have, you know, in the short term. So I think for the most part, they've done things, I would say, the right way. Could they have teased or you know, hyped up something that's coming later? Yes, they absolutely could have. But, you know, I don't fault them for the way that they've done things. But what are your thoughts? Because I am very, very interested to hear what you have to say on this one.
I mean, I approach this topic hesitantly because marketing is something that these companies do a lot of research on. It is something that you have entire departments analyzing, evaluating the proper timing. When is the right avenue to relay a message when it comes to a certain game? What is the highest means of exposure mm-hmm. for a product?
Yeah.
And when I look at the partner showcase in June, perhaps Nintendo could have announced it a little earlier in the month so that fans could have calmed expectation of what was going to be in a direct for the month of June. Because as we mentioned in the prior episode, the month of June has always had that general direct when there is an yes. E3.
And let me ask you a question on that. Were you surprised when it was a partner showcase?
Yes, because I did expect them to come in with a general direct for the month because there was still a lot of stuff for this year that they could have communicated at that time, be it like Xenoblade Chronicles 3, which we saw get its own direct the week before the partner, you know, broadcast. So that felt like something that could have been part of a general direct. We had Bayonetta 3 dated a few weeks later on Twitter. We then had the Splatoon 3 direct this month. All of that content could have been held in a general direct, and to some capacity, yes, you would have had to edit the Xenoblade Chronicle 3 presentation down a bit, and you would have had to edit the Splatoon 3 content down a bit, but you could have had some of those elements in a general direct back in June and then said later this summer we're going to have further information about Splatoon 3 and then done more of that deep dive like we saw this past, what was it, last week or earlier this week?
Yeah.
So it was slightly a surprise, but this could have also been a case of Nintendo may have been planning a bigger showcase for June. And then once they look at the situation, they may have had to modify the show.
Right.
That has been something Nintendo has done with directs in the past. So it's not out of the realm of possibility that is what happened this year. And I mean, that's the thing with marketing. It is always changing. Now, when it comes to being transparent with their plans, I mean, I wrestle with this because if in June they had said, we're going to talk about Splatoon 3 and other first-party software for 2022 later this summer, with that comes an expectation.
Exactly, yeah.
And it could have been, in the minds of people, it could have been, it means it's going to be a first-party direct.
Right.
Or it means a general direct might come in July or August. And then the days would have gone on, and you would have seen some Twitter drops. And then the Splatoon 3 direct would have dropped. And some would have been angry that it wasn't a big showcase with all these games. Instead, it was individual announcements scattered over a 6 to 7 week period. So in a way, we probably would have fallen back to that expectation of, oh, Nintendo should have been more transparent with these plans. And with September right around the corner, yes, there's already that discussion going around in fan communities of, is there going to be a September Direct? Yes, I have heard that there are plans for a September Direct.
But we don't know what that
now, is. Now, knowing that...
It doesn't have to be a general, right? I mean, could be.
Right, it doesn't have to be a general.
Yeah.
It more than likely is a general. I do not know the branding of the Direct. I just know there are plans of a Direct in the month of September. But now, knowing that, does that give you any relief in having this knowledge? Or is it still one of those cases of, it's nice to know that what has been an annual event will continue to be an annual event, but ultimately, you still have to wait for Nintendo to put out the tweet to confirm it to really have that, it's happening.
Exactly. Yeah, I think what you're saying is, it doesn't really matter. In fact, the only thing it really adds to the conversation is maybe just some confusion and anticipation for something that you're kind of waiting for an announcement anyway to alleviate your fears or confirm your thoughts about something that was probably going to happen anyway. I just think at the end of the day, you know, Nintendo's always played things very safe when it comes to these things. You know, we don't know necessarily what went on behind the scenes of the partner showcase. You're right, Nate. There could have been enough there to form a general direct, but there could have been a couple of things that fell out at the last minute for them to say, you know what, we don't feel confident with the general right now. We don't have enough meat in this presentation to do a general based on things that have happened beyond our control. And what I'm talking about is games that are still quite not ready yet, you know. They probably just called an audible at that point. But yeah, I don't think they need to really go beyond that and say, we're going to announce something, you know, at the end of the summer or in September. Because, we're kind of expecting something anyway based on you know, what Nintendo usually does. And two, that it's just adding that additional pressure on yourself as a hardware maker, as a publisher, that you don't really need that heat, you know, just show your hand, but don't show the entire deck. You know what I'm saying? Like you've got so many aces, you've got so many cards that you can draw from, but you don't need to show everything. You don't need to let everyone know what's going on. So I think Nintendo, honestly, Nate, I think they've played summer. They play their hand extremely well. I can't really fault them for what they've done. Would it have been cool to have gotten a little more information about, you know, the partner showcase and potentially some of the absences there? Maybe. I mean, I know we're going to talk about Microsoft as well in this conversation, and they kind of did things a little differently. But I don't fault Nintendo for what they've done, and I think given this year and given the fact that so many games have been delayed and things like that, I think they've played it pretty well.
Yeah, and you bring up an interesting point with the pressure.
Yeah.
Because let's say back in June, Nintendo did mention, we're going to talk about our first-party lineup for the remainder of 2022 and early 2023 later this summer. Now, that would come with the expectation of this is going to be the holiday lineup. Breath of the Wild 2 should be in there.
Yes.
But now if all of a sudden one of those games that does not have a locked in release date begins to shift, they don't want to assign it a release date in a trailer or in this presentation. So they may call that audible, remove it entirely. Mm-hmm. Or you do the presentation and then you run that risk of, yes, in July we dated such and such for a November release. Now in October, we have to delay it 2 months.
Right.
And that looks like bad optics because then it's going to come around and people are going to say, well, why did you just date it? Exactly. Why didn't you wait? And it happens. We've seen games get delayed months after being dated for a variety of reasons. There's still a lot of uncertainty in the development community when it comes to game development. And I mean, there's a lot of areas Nintendo can be more transparent, especially with their marketing. Mm-hmm. And I feel as though they are trying to relay information the best they can to fans. It's just, at the end of the day, Nintendo fans, they want a lot.
Right.
When it comes from Nintendo in terms of information, trailers, and access to games. And I don't know if Nintendo is equipped to do it to the capacity in which fans are looking. But like for me personally, we've seen Bayonetta 3 just not even a handful of times. And I am content with that. I don't need to see Bayonetta 3 again between now and release.
Yeah.
The release date trailer they put out in July was more than satisfactory to tie me over until the launch.
Yep.
I don't need to see it in a September Direct. I personally don't want to see Bayonetta 3 again. Mm-hmm. Because one thing that you see from a lot of game coverage, especially in terms of like hype trailers and social media coverage, is that there's too much of it. You see too much of the game before it is even in your hand.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Just give me the essentials. I want to see the gameplay.
Right.
I want to see a little bit about the story, and I want a release date. Once I have all three of those down, I can then,
yeah,
you know, decide whether or not I'm going to give a pre-order or if it has my interest. If you haven't gotten my interest with a gameplay trailer and a narrative trailer,
yeah,
well, I'll wait for a review.
Right.
But those are the key points you have to nail in your marketing. And I think Nintendo has finally kind of realized that with certain projects that they do. And that's why we're seeing this close to the chest, limited marketing cycle. And Metroid Dread is the prime example of this. It was announced in June, released in October, and in that final stretch leading up to release, I think maybe it was the final month, we saw a lot of social media engagement where they were doing some of the lore of the Metroid franchise. They were doing quick gameplay clips. Mm-hmm. And it made you kind of anticipate the release, like, oh, it's only 10 days away, week away. That's good, strong marketing.
Yeah.
But look at the actual marketing of release or announcement to release. Mm-hmm. 3 months. And that it was impactful. You were hyped in June. You were anticipating this release and bam, it was in your hands. And that's strong. And I mean, when it comes to directs, maybe Nintendo could go the path of, hey, we're seeing a lot of rumors out there of a indie world, of a general direct for this month, this week. No, that information is inaccurate. Mm-hmm. But that also comes with the risk of they're not going to comment every time there's a rumor. And then if they don't comment, it leads people to believe that it means something is happening because they didn't issue a comment.
Exactly.
So transparency is a tough thing when it comes to marketing. I mean, none of these companies are intentionally being, you know, secretive. Mm-hmm. They want to communicate with you. It's just the best. What is the best method of doing so? So when I look at Nintendo and the partner direct, I don't think it would have hurt them to say that we are going to talk about some of our first party games over the next several weeks. It may have benefited fans a bit just knowing, hey, we could still see Bayonetta. We could still get a release date. We're going to hear more about Xenoblade Chronicles. We're going to hear more about Splatoon 3 because, you know, at this point, Splatoon 3 was already dated, but we just had seen a very limited amount of media around the game. I could see where that would have brought a sense of relief.
We'll be back after a quick break. Ever thought modern video games should be more interesting? At The Gaming Blender, we take randomized genres, mechanics, and make a new game every episode.
I've added permadeath.
We have a survival game of a hardcore simulation, which could be House Flipper, and with the permadeath of XCOM, then that all has to be an action adventure.
Yes.
Ooh, dear.
Yes.
And sometimes it doesn't quite work.
And you have a construction off over the course of the narrative.
A construction off? The way we can do this is that we ditch your idea entirely.
Entirely.
Check out The Gaming Blender on all your favorite podcast platforms now.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the only thing I will say is I remember when The Partner came out and once it came and went, people were like, okay, so when's the general coming? Because people then kind of thought that there was one coming out in July, you know? So it's kind of like damned if you do, damned if you don't almost, you know? If they did communicate that this is a partner showcase beforehand and set some expectations, then I think people would have just been like, well, there's definitely a general that's coming in July. So does it really make that much difference at the end of the day? Because people kind of felt like that was going to happen anyway.
But I guess that's one of the situations where it's depending on how they phrase it, where if they decide we're doing a partner, we don't have a general direct in the immediate future, but we are going to communicate about our games over the next several weeks. That way it would have dispelled any rumor or discussion about a general coming in July or even August.
I think that's the key thing. If they said, we don't have any other information to communicate, you know, for the next several weeks or something, that probably would have helped, you know, eliminate those people that kind of were assuming that there was going to be something more coming, you know, in July.
Right. So, I mean, it's definitely a tricky area for a company like Nintendo because, as we mentioned in the last show, the Nintendo Direct is a brilliant piece of marketing concept. It's just kind of become Nintendo's Frankenstein where everyone is expecting a Direct to come at any time and to carry huge announcements and to deliver on hype where Nintendo no longer has control of this monster.
Right.
And when you really look at the calendar year, we typically get a Direct to start the year in the middle of the year, which is June, and then another one around that September, October window. And then maybe we'll get a game focused Direct scattered throughout the year, depending on Nintendo's release schedule. And that's been a formula that Nintendo has pretty much stuck to. Whereas in the early days, you could have had a Direct every month. They just dropped. You never really had. So now that we have that kind of that expectation, you just immediately begin to have that discussion and speculation of, well, we're getting closer to June. We're getting closer to September. So it means something must be coming. And while, yes, it does seem to happen that way quite often, ultimately it doesn't have to. And maybe that's where Nintendo could look for some self-reflection of, well, the last 12 years we've had a showing in September. If we do not intend to have a show in September, maybe come out and say we will not be having a Direct this month, just to alleviate some of that expectation. But at the same time, I guess it's not on Nintendo to calm fans' expectations. If Nintendo has not communicated plans to you, don't have the expectation of those plans.
Right.
And that's not defending Nintendo. It's just saying that's how Nintendo could view this. It's not our responsibility to relax your expectation.
Exactly. No, I totally agree with what you're saying.
Now we're going to go to Sony, who is kind of the polar opposite of Nintendo in the sense of they really only have one major show a year. And it's usually around the month of September, maybe October, when they have the PlayStation Showcase. Now, these aren't guarantees, but Sony also leans on the State of Play. And those are typically third-party focused or they're game focused. Earlier this year, we had one for Horizon, Gran Turismo 7, Very likely we'll have one for God of War Ragnarok as that nears release in November. One area that Sony fans definitely have a lot of expectation, though, and I guess it's an area where Sony could be more transparent in their marketing, is game trailers or gameplay demonstrations of games. You can look at God of War Ragnarok right now, and there's a lot of anticipation as to when are we going to see more of this game. And personally, I'm a little bewildered by this this focus on when are we going to see more of this game. I've seen enough of God of War Ragnarok. I don't need to see any more of it. I was content when they showed the game last year. This isn't something I need to see more of, but fans want to see more. Look at all that anticipation over the release date trailer, where people for weeks were saying, where's the trailer? Why isn't Sony showing us more? Or we could even use The Last of Us as an example, where they announced the game in June and we were in July and people saying, well, why haven't we seen gameplay yet?
Yeah, this is interesting. The Sony is, like you said, is definitely almost polar opposite to what Nintendo's been doing. Obviously, the June State of Play was their biggest show, at least so far, and it was very, very similar to the Nintendo partner in that we saw a lot of really cool stuff. I thought it was a good show. We saw Resident Evil 4, Street Fighter 6 got revealed, Final Fantasy 16, the Village updates, No Man's Sky, Spider-Man coming to PC, the Callisto Protocol we saw, its gameplay debut. So overall, it was a solid show. But yeah, I mean, the first-party stuff was really nowhere to be found. And yeah, Ragnarok is kind of the big question mark as well. It's like, yeah, we've seen some stuff from Ragnarok, but we've only seen that same trailer that we've seen, you know, for a long time now. And yeah, there probably will be an additional state of play, probably in September to market the game, I'm sure, and they'll show us more about the game. But I think, you know, overall, Sony is kind of a lot different than the other two in that they kind of just drop these things when they, at least my perception is, whenever they feel like doing it. You know, it's not something where they kind of gather up a bunch of different things and really put together a solid show. It's like, well, you know, if Ragnarok is ready to go, or if we're ready to start the marketing, or, you know, spin up the marketing engine, then hey, we're going to do a state of play on it quickly. You know, they also did this, you know, with some of their other releases as well. So I don't know, you know, they've always been the odd man out, you know, in so many ways. And I think it goes back to when they kind of untethered themselves from, you know, E3 and these shows where they decided that they would not just, you know, they would not attend these big shows anymore, these big trade shows. Mm-hmm. And they would just kind of do things themselves. So, you know, we're expecting something in September, you know, a state of play or you know, a PlayStation show to really round off the year and show us what's going on with their big first party games. But, you know, I think, you know, they just kind of just do things whenever they kind of feel like it. At least for me, that's kind of the perception. So there's definitely a lot of differences there with what Nintendo's doing.
I mean, one area that I can look at Sony in a different light is with Nintendo, we know that there are still games for this year that Nintendo have not communicated to us. Mm-hmm. Whereas Sony,
we
know their lineup for this year.
Right.
Their big holiday game is God of War Ragnarok. There is no hidden gem lurking in the shadows for Sony. Well, this is their lineup for 2022.
You're right. But I will say, and I don't know this for a fact, but I feel like this year was supposed to be PSVR 2, the announcement. But for whatever reason, and I'm assuming it comes down to hardware, chip shortages, and you know, things beyond their control, that clearly is not happening anymore. Because we don't even have a price around it. Like, I feel like at some point this year, they just decided, no, this has to be 2023 now. So I do think that there was probably more on the cards for us to see, especially around PSVR2. Because, we saw a bunch of PSVR2 exclusives get announced and some games, but we didn't actually get to see much more of the hardware itself. So I kind of got the feeling that PSVR2 was some percentage of their marketing for this year, but it clearly got pushed out to next year.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. That PlayStation VR 2 was likely supposed to be a Hollywood holiday staple for the PlayStation 5 this year. And as you mentioned, due to shortages, screen shortages, not the hardware has very likely been delayed out of this year. And I mean, they have communicated a bit about the accessory. We've seen the controllers, as you mentioned. We've seen some of the games. Resident Evil Village is getting the VR mode that they showed back in June. They have talked about some of the software coming to the hardware. But as of this point, we don't know when it's coming out. And we don't know a price point. But I do think earlier this year that was their intention, because originally God of War Ragnarok was penciled in for a late September launch. It then slid a bit where it was looking maybe it would make early October. And then just very recently, before they actually gave it a release date, it has slid into November. So that is quite a slide.
Oh, yeah.
That late in the development cycle where it was, we're targeting September. You know what? We're not going to make it until November. Now, is that a sign of anything happening development-wise? Could it just be a needed extra polish? Or was it a case of Sony really wanted to have PlayStation VR 2 this holiday, realized that wasn't going to happen, so that we have to have something this holiday? We can position God of War Ragnarok there because we have The Last of Us remake for part one that we can slot in early September. So this way we have at least a big release every couple of months. So, but the one thing, like, Sony has been transparent in a lot of areas, but like with God of War, when they dated it, if they said we're going to have a God of War state of play later this year, now, does that give you any relief in knowing, hey, we're going to see the game further as we get closer to release? Or is it kind of just one of those situations of you expect it because we've seen Sony do it so many times, but I've seen people really anxious about getting a new trailer for the game, seeing more gameplay, whereas Sony's marketing has really kind of been laser focused. They like to focus on one big thing, and their next big release isn't God of War Ragnarok. It's The Last of Us Part One, which they've had a rough time with the marketing because game leaked. They had to push up a gameplay demonstration earlier than scheduled, it would appear.
Yeah.
And it answered a lot of questions that fans had, but Sony was waiting for a specific time to drop that video and information.
So going back to God of War for a sec, I don't know what the right answer is, because I do recall that Corey Balrog was, you know, tweeting about Ragnarok like back in April, saying that there was that one tweet that he made, and I don't remember the exact context, but it gave a lot of people concern that maybe this game's going to get delayed, you know, even though he basically came out and said it'll be ready when it's ready, you know, we'll show it when it's ready, you know what I mean? And a lot of people kind of took that as, wait a minute, this game's getting delayed, it may not come out this year. So what is the, I guess the question is, what is the right thing to do here? Because, you know, Corey's is coming out and trying to alleviate fears of the game, but in many ways, his words got read as something along the lines of, oh, this doesn't sound very good. This could potentially delay the game to next year, which was never going to happen. We knew the game was coming out this year, but a lot of people just kind of took it differently. So do you think I guess I'll turn it back to you. Do you think stuff like that, when you've got your lead, the lead designer on the project, actually he's not the lead designer on the project. He's involved, but he's not that involved.
Yeah, he's not a director or anything. Yeah. He had some input, right, but he's working on his own project.
But I mean, he's tweeting about the game, right? Mm-hmm. Do you think that developers or designers that are involved, intimately in the game, do you think they should get involved in kind of tweets to help, alleviate fears or help with some marketing around it? Because I personally felt like Corey probably should have said nothing. Look, at the end of the day, it doesn't really make a huge difference, but it did just generate some uncertainty and some doubt about the game, once he made those tweets.
And in that situation, I think what Corey did was wise. Mm-hmm. There was all the speculation of why aren't we seeing the game? Why aren't they? He just came out and said, we'll show when it's ready. And he had reiterated time and time again on Twitter, it's coming out this year.
Yeah.
Nobody has to panic. It's coming out this year. The time just isn't right as to when it's going to be shown. We will show it when it's ready. And if that becomes clickbait headlines of God of War, is it in trouble? That's on the outlet. Mm-hmm. That decides to take that and frame it that way, because if you can read what he said yourself, and it is not framed in a, hey, there's going to be delay coming. He reiterated so many times that it was going to make this year, and other employees for Sony Santa Monica said it continuously, 2022. Yeah. Every time they were asked if the delay was coming. So I think in select cases, a developer, if they are allowed to, should be able to come out and verbalize, mm-hmm, if there's going to be, if there's any reason to be concerned, or just to dismiss the rumors or fears that a delay may be incoming. Because when you view it that way, they're not going to come out and make a comment of, no, it's not going to be delayed, only for them to officially delay it a week later.
Right, right.
Like, they're only going to make a statement when they know what they're saying is locked in and nothing's going to deviate from the plan. So I don't think that's bad. It's a good level of transparency that maybe the industry needs. Now, with a company like Nintendo, you will never get that because so many of their games are from the Japanese side. But for a company like Sony and has that Western development base, I don't think it'd be a bad thing for them to utilize moving forward, of just being able to communicate with the fans of saying, you don't have anything to really, relax. Or even the case with The Last of Us. You had the leaks happen saying there's no gameplay changes. And you had employees from Naughty Dog saying there are changes. We'll detail them at a later time. Now, whether or not the changes are substantial enough to you, that's a topic for a different day. But they did put out the video later, and it was something they were planning on doing. Had the leaks never happened, that video could have come out. But now, conversely, when Sony announced the game back in June and they had the blog post and everything up there, I don't think it would have hurt them to detail these changes instead of giving the vague, meaningless blog press release verbiage of, we're modernizing it. Yeah. Just say what the changes are at that time, so the expectation is set in the immediate. Don't leave us wondering of, but what does modernize mean? Tell us.
Right.
Because they kind of hurt themselves there by being vague. You let people balloon the idea that we're going to have The Last of Us 2 type mechanics. There's going to be prone and jumping and all these other mechanics be introduced into The Last of Us Part 1, which really wouldn't make sense given the setting and environments in Part 1. But that's something we can discuss when we actually play the game. But had you just addressed it in the immediate, a lot of those concerns would have been quelled right there.
I agree.
There would have been no rumor, no fears. A few weeks later, it would have been, this is what we're getting. Okay.
Yeah.
This game isn't for me. Instead of all this sky-high expectation of what the game could have been
yes.
had we had these part two mechanics introduced, only to learn all the stuff you thought was going to be there isn't there. And it's our fault because we made our wording intentionally vague to excite you.
I totally agree with you on that, Nate. Look, I've been very outspoken about The Last of Us Part 1 remake. Look, I think a lot of it is fake outrage, you know, and I've talked about this before, especially on the Spawncast. But I definitely agree with what you're saying about the wording around the game. I'm not saying they've been misleading, but they've kind of had these terms and phrases used that make you believe in your mind that this game is going to be have a lot more systems and a lot more mechanics than it was ever going to have. Like you said, when you talked about proning and dodging, I think the other line that I was a little bit bemused when they said was built from the ground up for the PlayStation 5, right? Because built from the ground up is another one of those terms that means you demolished what you currently have and you're starting over from scratch. You know, you're going brick by brick almost, you know, you're starting again, right? That's how I interpret it, and you may interpret it a different way, but that's what they said, right? And you know what they're actually doing though is they're taking the current code base that they had that ran on the PlayStation 4, and they're rebuilding it to run natively on the PlayStation 5, and they're enhancing the graphics and some gameplay mechanics. Which, yeah, you could say that does fit the built from the ground up, you know, message. But I would argue against that and say it kind of doesn't. You know, it's a port almost. You know, you're taking the code, you're porting it to the PS5, and then you're enhancing it. And you know, for me, it's not really built from the ground up, but. I want to hear what you think about that, because I think out of all the lines that they used in the marketing around The Last of Us remake, that was the one that kind of just threw me off a little bit.
I mean, you bring up a good point there with the ground up, because when you do think of a remake, you look at Resident Evil 4.
Yeah.
You think of that, like that is a ground up remake yes. of Resident Evil 4. Whereas The Last of Us seems to be closer in line to Demon's Souls.
Yes.
It is taking the foundation that was already there, building up on it, as you mentioned. And, I mean, yeah, it is a remake in a literal sense, because it is far more than a remaster. It's just when you do see that line, it brings your mind to a different place, because it brought a lot of people to the idea of they're remaking The Last of Us Part 1 in the style of Part 2 with all those modern refinements. Everything's going to feel just like it felt in 2. We're going to have the controls. We're going to have so much new utilization of the controller and such. But it was really, as you mentioned, we're rebuilding it for the PlayStation 5. It's still ultimately The Last of Us Part 1. Mm-hmm. It's the game you remember. So it is a remake. It just, I mean, and that's one of those things where if they were more transparent with it.
Yeah, I agree.
It would have been beneficial for them. And I mean, I don't blame them for using the descriptor that they did in the blog. Because ultimately, that is a press release. That is marketing. And marketing's job is to sell you the product. And that is what they did. Now, a lot of people got mad once the full truth came out, but there's nothing they technically, and I'm using air quotes here, lied about. Mm-hmm. They were forthcoming. They just omitted certain details to make the product sound different than what it ultimately ended up being. But, I mean, that's one of those industry terms with the remake versus remaster that we really don't have clarity on.
Absolutely. Absolutely right.
And I mean, and that's the thing. It's we almost need set we need to find true examples where we don't have this gray line anymore. Like, a remake is this, and the industry as a whole has to utilize it in that fashion.
Yeah.
Like, even Final Fantasy VII Remake, all the marketing led you to believe that you're going to be playing Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah.
PS1.
Yep.
Remade for the PS5. Instead,
yep,
it's a retelling. It's literally a remake,
mm-hmm,
in every sense of the word. Of it's Final Fantasy VII, but it's remade in a completely different way.
We changed the story.
It's almost a sequel. Yep. And that's what we're getting, like, with Resident Evil 4, Resident Evil 2, and even 3 to a certain extent. It's the game you remember, but not quite.
Yeah.
And The Last of Us Part 1, it wouldn't fit in that criteria with that group of games.
Right.
It's more like Ocarina of Time 3D.
Exactly. It's like you said, it's like Demon's Souls. It's going to be like the Dead Space reboot that's coming, yes, out.
Mm-hmm.
It fits those that genre of games, or that those types of games that and look, I hate to say it, but, you know, less budget around it as well. You know, this is not a big budget undertaking. I mean, I'm sure it still probably cost a lot of money to get this game, you know, ready for the PS5. But this is not, right, this is not something that, you know, would have cost like $100 million to make.
Right. It wasn't Naughty Dog's focus for 5 years, yeah, full team. Because as the original story around the game goes, this was something that a external team was working on. And then Sony and Naughty Dog were like, give it, you know, we'll do it.
Yeah.
So this wasn't even something that they were really looking to do. But yeah, I mean, I think The Last of Us is a good example of where Sony's marketing ultimately failed them.
Agree.
It could have been resolved far earlier than it ended up being.
Yeah. And this isn't like the first time, you know, that they've been caught out like this. You know, there was obviously issues last year with Gran Turismo, you know, initially being a PlayStation 5 game. And then we found out later it was PS4 as well. They've had issues with, you know, wording and marketing around the cost of upgrades for different games, mm-hmm, and Horizon Forbidden West's upgrade path initially was something, yeah, that they kind of walked.
They said back. It was free, and then they said it was $10, and then they went back to free.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, Sony's had a rough go of it, you know, and Nate, you're absolutely right. Like, I think at the end of the day, it's okay to be more honest with your customers. You know, I'm not saying they're lying, but, you know, you stop using these words that have so many different interpretations. You know, just be honest with your customer base, and I think that people would react a lot better. And you're right. I think none of this Last of Us kind of outrage, and I'm using air quotes when I say that, a lot of it could have been eliminated or just completely, yes, completely avoided if they had just been lot more direct about what this game was when they, mm-hmm, unveiled it.
Yeah, from the onset, if they just said, these are the changes that are coming, this is how we're modernizing it, a major focus on accessibility options, some new physics in the environments, people would have said, oh, you know what, I don't think that's worth $70 like they have done since it came out or it was revealed.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have been fine.
Yeah.
It was just people ballooned what they thought the release was going to be, and then it did not live up to those lofty expectations. And that blame does fall on Sony, as we were discussing. They didn't give us the information as to what the changes meant until after leaks came out and revealed that they were very minimal changes based on the footage. And then it was kind of like, oh, now we have to do damage control because this is stuff we were going to communicate and it got out before we could. But you could have done it from the onset.
Yeah.
So The Last of Us is definitely Sony's most recent marketing failure, where just communication,
mm-hmm,
would have solved all their problems.
Absolutely.
And speaking of communication solving problems, enter Microsoft. Now, Microsoft really hasn't had a lot to talk about this year. They haven't released that many games this year. The main game that does get fairly consistent communication is Grounded and Halo Infinite. But one area where Microsoft's marketing failed, And it could have been alleviated with just simple communication. It was Microsoft's June showcase.
Yep.
So every June, Microsoft has a big showing, 90 minutes showing the future of the Xbox. And we have seen big games get revealed, games that aren't coming out for years. So enter June 2022. Mm-hmm. Everyone's expectation is we're going to see those games that Microsoft has not discussed in years or in months. And those titles included things like Hellblade 2, Avowed, mm-hmm. Perfect Dark.
Yep.
And having an expectation to see these games in the June showcase wasn't anything too outrageous. I mean, we haven't seen Avowed since the game was announced. Same with Perfect Dark, well over a year ago. I mean, Hellblade 2, we saw at the Game Awards. And, I mean, you also have, what's the other game from Ninja Theory?
Project Mara.
Yeah, Project Mara, which wasn't even shown at any event. It was just a YouTube drop. We haven't heard or seen of that again. There are so many projects Microsoft has announced that we simply haven't got updates on. So going into the June showcase, it was definitely a lot of anticipation for what could be there. And knowing Microsoft's cycle of showcasing games that are a year, 2 years, 3 years off from release, it's definitely a lot of hype for the show.
Yeah.
And then the show started. And Microsoft said, we're going to be focusing on the next 12 months. Almost immediately, even sitting at home, you could feel the air get sucked out of that presentation.
Almost immediately.
There was nothing that was going to be shown at the showcase
yeah.
that was going to give it life.
Yeah.
And this, keep in mind, this followed Starfield getting delayed.
Yes.
Just a few weeks prior.
And Redfall.
And Redfall yeah. into 2023. So all of a sudden, Redfall was supposed to come out this summer. Starfield was dated for November. And we're leading up to the June showcase, and both of these games are delayed into 2023. And Microsoft says we're focusing on the next 12 months.
Yeah, which is, I thought it was a very strange announcement. Like, I know why they did it, because they heard the feedback from last year where there was some criticism. I'm not saying it was, you know, universal criticism, that they were showing things that were too far away.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like they completely approached this the wrong way. Like you said, it completely sucked the air out of the showcase before it had even started. Because now we already know that Starfield and Redfall are delayed. Mind you, they showed both of those games at the showcase, right? Yes. So we know that we think they're coming out in the next 12 months, but by the way, there's no dates surrounding those games yet. So, you know, make of that of what you will. So then it's like, well, we're not going to get Perfect Dark. We're not going to get Fable. We're not going to get Hellblade 2. We're not going to get Project Mara. We're not going to get Everwild. We're not going to get, I don't know what else, what they're working on. But, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it was really just, it really just took the life out of the show before it even started.
Or even like Outer Worlds 2.
Yeah, exactly.
We weren't going to see all these games that had been big announcements in, you know, at events for Microsoft in just the last year. Mm. And had Microsoft is usually very open about their showcases. They like to announce them well in advance. They'd like to give you the length, set some expectation. And had they announced the date with that window of the next 12 months, people would have gone into that showcase understanding we're not going to see any of those games.
Yes.
This is going to be something just for the immediate future. And for the record, I think the next 12 months model from Microsoft should be something that they do moving forward. I totally agree. Like this model.
So do I. I like it as well. I think it's the right approach for them.
I just want to know about it ahead of time.
Exactly.
That's it. Had I known about that going into the show, I would have said, okay, we're going to see Forza Motorsport.
Yeah.
We're going to get the deep dive on Starfield, which we already knew about ahead of time.
Yes.
We knew we were going to get a lot of that. Would have expected Redfall. Mm-hmm. Would have expected the Josh Sawyer game, Pentiment.
Yep.
And then I would have sat back and said, well, let's see what else they can maybe surprise with coming out by June of 2023. And we're just kind of kicked back and enjoyed. Instead, it was,
yeah,
everything you thought you were going to see will not be here. And it was kind of a case of, why am I going to watch this for 90 minutes when everything I want an update on,
yeah,
isn't here? You told me this 2 weeks prior. Right. I would have had my head on straight. I would have come in with grounded expectation.
Yes.
And would have enjoyed the show for what it was.
Yeah, they showed their hand before they even showed the showcase, if that makes sense. We knew going in what wasn't going to be there. And it kind of just worked against them. I agree with you, Nate. I think the format of showing 12 months is the right play. And they should continue mm-hmm. to do it, because I think it makes a lot of sense, especially when it comes to Game Pass and showing their customers what to expect on Game Pass day one in the mm-hmm. next 12 months. I think that's something that they owe their customers. They need to show. But I will also say that you still have to have a little bit of time, not much, maybe 10 minutes at the end or 15 minutes at the end or whatever, to show longer term things that are going on. Because, yeah, showing the next 12 months is cool, but you still have to show what's going on with Perfect Dark or what's going on with Fable and what's going on with Hellblade 2. Mm-hmm. I feel like you still owe that to your customers about, you know, what's happening with these. Whether it's a tease, a tech trailer, I don't know. But I do think there is still room for a longer term, you know, 2+ year kind of thing to show us at the end of the show or something.
I mean, and see, that's the curious thing by doing the 12-month at this particular E3. Or not E3, this June yeah. showcase, is that this June showcase really felt like a repeat of last year's, yeah. where we saw Redfall again, Starfield mm-hmm. again. And now that we're left wondering about so many other games, you're going to look to the Game Awards, where Microsoft has typically had a fairly big presence in previous years.
They own the conference theater that they have mm-hmm. it in.
So going into this year's Game Awards, you're going to have that expectation of, surely we're going to see Avowed, right? Or we're going to see Perfect Dark or Hellblade 2. Like, we have to see these games eventually. And like, from a marketing standpoint, I understand why they announced the games when they did. We, as Microsoft, are selling you on the future of the system. These are the games that are going to come to this console at some point, and we're going to sell based on that hype. You want Perfect Dark? It's coming. You want Avowed? It's coming. Mm-hmm. This last E3 was more about, you own an Xbox. You're subscribed to Game Pass. Here's what you're going to be playing in the next 12 months, because we've sold you on the console at this point. Instead of selling you on the future, we're going to sell you on the now.
Yeah.
But at some point, we do have to see these games. And that's where, if they do the 12-month model moving forward, you have to utilize other events, be it XO, the Game Awards.
Yeah, exactly.
Gamescom, Tokyo Game Show, something.
Yeah.
To show the long-term projects, because you cannot go 2 years, 3 years of silence when it comes to a big release like Perfect Dark. Because we've seen it this year. People become fearful about what's happening with the project. And it happened the minute Crystal Dynamics was announced as being a collaborator on the project. People said, well, that means the initiative can't handle it. Something must,
right.
Something's going wrong with Perfect Dark, but it was always in the game plan.
Yeah.
But is the gaming community going to believe that? Of course not.
I think the other thing, you kind of touched on it. You mentioned the Game Awards, and that's a really great point too. You know, because by the time the Game Awards rolls around, 6 months of that 12-month window would have already passed. So mm-hmm. where is Redfall, you know, the date. Where is the Starfield date? You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
if the Game Awards comes and goes and we haven't really locked down any release dates, then, you know, that's not good optics, you know? And I guess in a different light, we already saw Perfect Dark get, you know, teased or unveiled at the Game Awards. We've seen Hellblade 2 twice at the Game Awards already. So are we going to see another Hellblade 2 trailer? I don't know if it'll still have the same impact as the last two. It might. I mean, it's a beautiful looking game running on Unreal Engine 5. But there's only, you know, you can only have so many chances before people just kind of, you know, turn off and go to something else. So I do really like the 12 month thing. But I also feel like it's putting a lot of pressure on Microsoft to not only execute on everything they said they were going to deliver in the next 12 months without delays. And we know delays have been coming from everywhere right now in the industry. So there's no guarantee that some of these games will make that 12-month window. Hopefully they will. And number two, losing sight of the bigger picture, you know, the stuff that's further out, but the big heavy hitter games that made Xbox the name that it is today, you know, the Perfect Darks, the Fables, the Forzas, all those things need to be brought to light as well. We can't wait, like you said, Nate, we can't wait two more years in silence before we see a Perfect Dark trailer. You know, like there has to be something between now and then. I'm not suggesting it's anything more than you know, a gameplay trailer or something, but there needs to be some communication, some marketing to say, you know, this is going well and this is what we have to show.
Like, see, that's one of the avenues they could also explore. You don't even, if you're not going to host it at an event, have the initiative come out with a developer blog.
Yeah, or even have, with the media and have them write articles about it.
Just know. have an interview, show us a trailer, just give us something to know progress is being made. We just want a status update.
Right.
I mean, Fable got announced. We have not heard a whisper about Fable since. Avowed got announced. It's been silent on Avowed. These are games you sold your system on, and now fans have owned your system going on 2 years come November, and these games are missing. And we haven't had status updates. We haven't had any meaningful update on the games in any way. So if you're not going to show them at a June showcase, you have to headline them someplace else, again, be it EXO, the Game Awards, or just on the Xbox Newswire blog with a YouTube upload with a developer blog, something, just so fans can have something to consume and discuss. And I mean, Microsoft, out of the big three, is kind of the company where it feels as though no one really expects or asks that much from them when it comes to communication and transparency and what is happening behind the scenes with games. People just kind of sit back and say, it's Microsoft. It's never really been their thing. They were pretty open that we don't have that many games for 2022.
Yeah.
So we don't have anything to talk about. And that's really how we're going to treat the year. Please look forward to Halo Infinite's upcoming update, where we'll include co-op and campaign and Forge mode. Beyond that, the next big game we have is Forza in 2023 with Starfield and Redfall, but we'll talk about those when we get closer to being able to give them a release date.
Right.
And generally, fans are okay with that. And I think that's a testament to what Microsoft has done this generation with Game Pass, that they haven't had a huge release since Forza Horizon 5 last year.
Yeah.
And they're still selling. They're still doing well in spite of this.
So the big elephant in the room is the Activision acquisition, which I don't know when it's going to go through. I've heard rumblings that it may go through this year. I don't think it will, but it might. But here's my question. How does Call of Duty change their marketing plans, if at all? I feel like it will, because, I mean, they have the biggest franchise in the world at their disposal. How do you think that fits into this?
I mean, ultimately, I don't think Call of Duty is going to change that much in terms of marketing. And I don't mistake that as me saying, like, the Call of Duty ownership isn't a big deal. It's huge.
Yeah.
It is essentially going to change how Sony will no longer monopolize early access to multiplayer maps and such like that. Once that contract is up, Microsoft is not going to be renewing it with Sony. Mm-hmm. That's going to become a perk.
Yeah.
I believe under Microsoft's control and lure you to Game Pass into their ecosystem. But ultimately, I think Call of Duty is Minecraft. It's going to be on every platform it can be on, because when you look at the community of Call of Duty, it thrives on PC, PlayStation, Xbox. That is the ecosystem of the game. Microsoft knows that is the ecosystem, and they're not going to look to shrink it and say it can only be on the Xbox. Let it thrive the way it is, because this is going to sound weird in terms of phrasing. Call of Duty is a game you buy for the system you own.
Yes.
But you do not buy a system for Call of Duty.
Exactly.
It's not a system seller. Those who play Call of Duty on the PlayStation,
yeah,
that is where they play Call of Duty. They're not going to buy an Xbox to play Call of Duty if Microsoft said, let's make it exclusive. They're going to move on to a different game. And I think Microsoft is aware of that. So ultimately, I mean, I don't know if Call of Duty is going to have a huge impact in terms of marketing by Microsoft or the Xbox brand itself, but it's definitely going to be a big get where Microsoft can create incentive and perks to lure some people over to Game Pass,
yeah,
be it early access to multiplayer maps, beta access, things like that. I see Microsoft utilizing to the best of their ability to push Game Pass in some fashion.
Yeah, well said. I mean, you're right. People don't buy systems for Call of Duty. They just buy it for the systems that they have. But yeah, having Call of Duty as one of your aces up your sleeve is big, because all of a sudden that next whole months of games, I mean, we should always see Call of Duty in that lineup, right? If they continue to release yearly Call of Duty or annual Call of Duty releases.
Yeah, I mean, and that's kind of one of the situations where I've said it every year since the Xbox series launched, is that Microsoft's roadmap is promising. The car just hasn't left the garage. The door is open. We're just waiting for them to step on the gas. And as we discussed, that roadmap has Fable, Hellblade, Perfect Dark, Avowed, The Outer Worlds, so many other games. We just have to get to them. And once Microsoft starts rolling, once that tire gets in motion, it's going to be like a rocket took off.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully, the first half of 2023 is the beginning of that propulsion. But unfortunately, it feels as though we have been saying that since November of 2020, whereas 2021, we're going to see Microsoft start to hit their stride with Halo. Halo was a stumble, and it was like, well, Forza Horizon 5, fantastic game. But then there was no follow-up in terms of meaningful content from the Xbox studios in 2022. It was, you got the awesome Lego expansion, but there was no major release from Microsoft this year. 2023 looks to change that based on that 12-month model that we've seen. We'll see how Microsoft communicates at the Game Awards, if they're going to, tease anything long-term. But June was definitely the failure in terms of marketing communication on Microsoft's half. They just had to let us know it was a 12-month window.
Yeah.
A couple of weeks in advance.
Yeah, I mean, the intent was good. The idea was very good. The messaging around it was horrible. I think anyone that did a predictions episode before the show was just
always a delight to talk.
Completely, and if you like defeated this when the show just episode, started, I know sure we were. You know, we did our predictions and everything.
Content creation, click you know, it's just one of those things where in the comment section below,
again, you know, the intent is good. Time, it's definitely the right approach, and I want Microsoft to continue with the with that type of marketing around their games and Game Pass. But man, I mean,
just let us know.
You know, give us a heads up. Even if it was the day before, that's enough time for people to reset expectations on what's happening.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. Like, Avowed was one of those games where everyone was like, oh, we're definitely going to get an update on this.
Yeah.
The game's coming out in 2023. This is the perfect time to see it. And next 12 months, it was just...
Yep.
Everything was out of the room. It was like, oh no.
Yeah, it wasn't what? Great. I mean, it was still a good show, and I enjoyed what they had to show. I mean, there was definitely some highlights, you know.
Oh, it was a great show for that 12-month window.
Yeah, the Persona games and Diablo 4 and So I mean, it was still a very good show, but it was just, you know, it like you said, it just took the wind out of you before it even started. Yeah.
Just wasn't the show anyone expected.
Yeah.
And again, could have been alleviated had they just been a little more forthcoming with information leading up to the broadcast. So yeah, these are some of the marketing failures of this year for the big three, where communication really could have solved everything just by being a little more forthcoming in what you had planned. Of the three, I would say Microsoft is probably the most egregious.
Yeah.
Sony, I would give second with The Last of Us,
I'd give Sony a close second. Like, I think The Last of Us was, I mean, you can just tell that it didn't go very well for them.
And, I mean, Nintendo does Nintendo things. I think they could have been a little more transparent in how they were going to approach the summer with some Twitter drops in regards to first party announcements. But compared to the other two.
Yeah.
Nintendo is definitely on the lighter side of guilt here. But we can now pivot to some of the Streamlabs questions for this week. And our first question comes from Enix93, who donated $1. And they write, "Hey guys, love your work. Is Nintendo really trying to push NSO like Sony PlayStation Plus? Or is everything just a bluff? I am eagerly waiting for Mario Party 2 and especially GameCube games since the release of the Switch, yet nothing."
You want to answer?
I mean, it's similar to PlayStation Plus in regards to it is an online service that they charge you money for each year to access a collection of games. I mean, Mario Party 2 has a very realistic chance. Given N64 is on NSO. GameCube games, I would not expect this generation to appear on NSO. But yeah, ultimately, NSO is similar to PlayStation Plus. Yeah. Not exactly like a Game Pass, but kind of Game Pass in an indirect way, in a not as good way. Yeah, it's Nintendo's online service, ultimately, with the bonus of game access.
I agree with you in that I would not expect to see GameCube this generation.
No.
I think, you know, it could be something they look at next gen. We definitely know that they have a GameCube emulator that's been developed and being used in some games, but that doesn't translate to them being able to give us GameCube releases on the NSO service. I think there's a lot more to just dropping GameCube games than just the emulator that we know that they have. I think there's a lot more around it. You know, we get into that licensing area all of a sudden of some of these games, and just gets a lot more complicated. But I do think we'll see it at some point, probably with whatever comes next.
with a price hike to NSO.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. I mean, you can't charge what you're charging now and put GameCube on there. I mean, I'd love it if they did. I think that would be probably the best service out of all the three. but I just don't see it. I don't see that right now with GameCube.
No, I mean, I think if we see GameCube games on Switch, I think they would be like HD remasters that they can charge $40 for individually.
Absolutely. I mean, they've already done a couple of games already. I mean, why not tap into your back catalog at that point and really
make money
these games and bring them back and up-res them and do all that really cool stuff.
And the nice release lineup fillers as well.
Yep. Yeah, you want F-Zero? Here's GX. We brought it back.
Exactly. Boom.
Yeah, it's one way to do it.
Man, if only.
I'm putting that out into the universe.
Also, the game can sell poorly for a second time.
I'll still buy it. I'll double
dip. I'd buy it too.
I'll double
dip. I love that game. Then had a $1 donation from Drake the Love. Greetings. Two questions. If it's okay, we'll see. Question one. Is there a new 3D Mario game in development, non-successor to Odyssey? I'd be very surprised if there isn't a new 3D Mario game in development.
You'd think there is one right now that they're playing around with over there. It's being developed. Mm-hmm. I would expect something.
Question two. There are rumors from Copite7ki, 7kimi, that the Switch Pro could use Ada. How likely is the use of ray tracing IO to achieve loading times like on PlayStation 5? Or RTX IO? What do you think?
I don't think you... I don't know. I mean, there could be some very limited form of ray tracing in this hardware. We know that NVIDIA clearly has the tech to make it happen. But I also wonder how feasible that would be with a hybrid system. So I guess my answer is maybe, but... I don't know. I mean, I feel like it's one of those features that they're probably have been trying out in their R&D labs. They've been playing around with it. They've been playing around with RTX. But whether it makes the final retail hardware because they realize it's going to add $50 to the bill of materials and they just need to cut more cost, potentially reduce or increased battery life, remains to be seen whether it ends up in the final. So I don't know. It may end up in there, but I don't know. What do you think about ray tracing?
I know ray tracing was on dev kits back in 2020. It was still being tinkered with. As to the RTX IO, which is accelerated storage with like the GPU, I don't know if that would be something that would be featured in the in the hardware.
I don't know. I mean
it comes down to power and power consumption, if it's even feasibly for the battery. Could be tested and then ultimately for Nintendo and NVIDIA to decide if the consumption is worth it or not. I mean, it really comes down to performance ultimately. Then had a $3 donation from Ganturus. They write, with the release of Live Alive, whatever it's called,
it's Live Alive.
Wouldn't Live Alive make more sense?
I always thought it was Live Alive, but when Nintendo revealed it, they said Live Alive. So
they probably sent like an email to Square. Like, how do you say it? And they just wrote back the name. They're like, that doesn't help.
You're right.
Live Alive makes more sense. But back to the question. With the release of Live Alive, I want to shout out my favorite RPG on the Switch, Octopath Traveler. I am collecting my favorite content creators' opinions. Who is your favorite Octopath Traveler and why? Stay awesome. I liked Primrose.
I'm getting caught up on this. I didn't care for Primrose.
What?
I don't know. Like, I got to be honest. I thought Octopath was a good game, but my favorite part of Octopath was the music.
Yeah, the music of Octopath Traveler is ridiculous. Primrose, I liked right from the onset in the first chapter when she's fighting her boss and she just basically tells him to go fuck himself. Then we had a $1 donation from Jackie G. Writes, if 2020 had been a normal year for game development, do you believe Cyberpunk could have launched in a satisfactory state?
No. I think the thing about Cyberpunk is, and it's not just the fault of Cyberpunk, but the game was in development for many, many, many years. And you get to a point in game dev where you're not even really sure anymore about what's in front of you. Because you've been working on this game for such a long time that, you know about all the issues with it, and you're like, oh, that's fine. I can live with that as a developer. And I think at the end of the day, CD Projekt Red was working on this game for such a long time where it almost had to come out, so they were basically given a come to Jesus kind of discussion on, you know, why this is so bad. Now they're fixing the game now, and I'm hearing good reports that it's much, much better these days. I haven't gone back and revisited it, but I've heard really good things that, you know, you should go back and try it because they've made so many big updates to the game. So I don't think it would have made a difference, honestly. Like, if they delayed the game another year, I don't think it would have mattered. Sometimes you just need the game to come out and have that No Man's Sky or Cyberpunk moment where you realize what you have, while there is something kind of special, this, you know, the game in its core has something really cool about it. You just need that. You need someone else besides, you know, your QA department to basically tell you that this game is not in a good state and it needs at least another 18 months for it to work properly.
Yeah, I mean, when I look at Cyberpunk, there's just flaws in the core of what the game is.
Yeah.
Maybe it would have launched in a slightly less glitchy, buggy state. But the game,
honestly, Nate, I think they should have dropped the PC version first.
Yes.
And basically just took in all the feedback from the PC version, which was the best version of the game, and applied that to the console versions and released them at a later stage. And they probably should have just axed the PS4 and the Xbox One versions as well.
Yeah.
But they sold millions of pre-orders. What was it, like 14 million pre-orders were sold, and 60% of those were consoles. So, I mean, you know.
They made their money.
Yep, they made up their minds and they made their money. And they're paying the price for it.
Well, you'd think.
Yeah.
Well, the second they announced the next Witcher game,
that's true.
You're going to get 15 million pre-orders day one.
People forget.
Yes, they do. Then had a $5 donation from Baron, who writes, hello, kind gentlemen. If you were working on Nintendo and could make any change to the current Switch hardware lineup to make it better or closer to your taste, what would you upgrade or change? Thank you very much.
Hardware lineup? Like, in terms of hardware? Like, adding something?
Yeah, I guess if you're doing like the family, so if you were to make the next Switch.
Well, I mean, I've always said, and I'm not talking about next generation. Let's assume it's the Switch family. I've always said that it doesn't need much. You know, you just need to take the low-hanging fruit of some of the bottlenecks that we currently have with the Switch, and that is maybe add a slight CPU SoC boost in terms of clocks. you know, nothing major, just a 15% one maybe, or 20% one. Add some more memory and reduce the memory latency. I think those three things alone would really help with the current lineup of games, and they wouldn't drop resolution so much, and you would start to get games that started to lock it at 30 or 60 FPS. Just kind of that stuff would be enough for me, I would say.
I, at this point, I just want Switch hardware that's capable of getting PS5, Xbox Series X quality ports, where it doesn't look like I'm playing my Wii again compared to an Xbox 360.
So it's going to run for about 15 minutes on battery, I'm hearing?
Yes.
Before it dies? Okay.
I just need an upgrade for this. I don't want MLB The Show looking like it does.
I agree with you. I mean, there is definitely an end of life date here coming, I would think.
Yeah, it's showing its age. And had a dollar donation from Aronson. You write, "Heya to both of you. Wanted to know if you had any Zelda updates, like Twilight Princess, Wind Waker HD, or things about it besides Breath of the Wild 2. And since there still isn't, or there wasn't anything yearly about it, and gee, it sure is boring around here."
What is happening with Wind Waker HD and Twilight Princess? Because we kind of felt like it was something that may get announced this year. Do you think that's still the case? Do you think that's the last thing Nintendo has up their sleeve for this year? Or do you think it's maybe something they just put back in their pocket and said, "No, we're going to hold on to this for a little while longer"?
If Twilight Princess and Wind Waker HD don't come to Switch this year, then I would say Nintendo opted to shelve them as far as Switch releases go. But we have had a Zelda release on a Nintendo platform for, I mean, every year, I think going back to almost a decade now, if not more.
Right.
So you would expect that would continue. They looked at it as an annual franchise. So let's see what September brings.
Yeah.
If we don't hear anything in September, then yeah, we can say that it's not happening. But it always felt like one of those cases that they had the games in their back pocket in the event that Breath of the Wild 2 was delayed. And since it was, it feels as though this would be the proper time to bring out at least one of them if you don't do a dual pack. So let's see what September brings, and, you know, hope for the best, because I wouldn't mind revisiting Wind Waker in a handheld portable setting.
Yeah, I'd be very much into that too.
Then had a $2 donation from Kevra. Writes, "My first question goes to the sexiest British man from Australia. Due to limitations at the time, there was no music when playing with three or four people in Mario Kart 64. However, how difficult would it have been to add it in for the emulated NSO version?"
They probably could have added it, because obviously with emulators you have more control about what you could do. They probably could have gone back and revisited it. The only thing I will say is obviously that requires more work, and remember the state that the NSO launched in. It was pretty rough. I'm not saying that they'll add it later on, but I think it's something they could have done. But, I mean, to be honest with you, the NSO N64 stuff is mostly stock as far as what they're showing, what they're giving us. They're just kind of, you know, giving us the old classics again on the Switch with a slightly better display. So the chances of that happening, I would say, are probably zero. But something they could have absolutely done if they had some time and or budget to do that.
They then follow up with an additional $2 donation, writing, "My next question is very similar, but for Mario Party 1. This game was notorious for causing blisters because of the stick rotation minigames. For the emulated version, do you think they would be able to change it so you had to button mash instead?
I don't think so. I mean, again, they don't really tend to change things around too much. And Nate, tell me if I'm wrong, but have they like made any quality of life enhancements to any of the games on the NSO? I don't think they have.
Not that I can recall from memory. Right. I mean, I know on the Japanese NSO, they put up like the Mario 64 and Wave Race later this week. They have the Rumble versions.
Oh, yeah, the Shindo versions. Yeah.
Yeah, which we did not get
right
in the West. So I don't recall any quality of life
right
enhancements that they have implemented into the game by changing code or anything, though.
Yeah, it's not really what they're doing here, even though I get what you're saying, and I think that would be really cool if they did make those adjustments to kind of make things easier. But yeah, generally speaking, they kind of leave the ROMs stock. You know, it's the same ROMs that you could just kind of download and play by yourself on another emulator.
And then followed up with an additional $2 donation and write, also, because this game caused a lawsuit, do you think it's coming to NSO? Perhaps with a warning to not use the palm of your hand for stick rotating minigames, similar to the way it warns us not to use your palm for tug of war in Mario Party Superstars.
I think Mario Party has to come to NSO at some point, right?
Maybe not the first one, but they could definitely do two or three or whatever's on the N64 in terms of entries.
I think there's a Mario Party game coming to NSO, but you're right, it may not be the first one.
And then followed up with an additional $2 donation. Speaking of Mario Party Superstars, Nintendo just tweeted, what's your favorite part of the game? Instead of answering the question, 99% of people replied by asking, demanding DLC of more old boards. Considering NOA is basically just a PR branch, this continues with an additional $2 donation. Does it matter? Do you think they care, or that it even gets relayed to NCL? Heck, do you think NOA even pays attention to the replies messages? Or because social media is a toxic place filled with whiny fanboys, do you think it's just disregarded? The majority of those type of replies are not read, they are not acknowledged. If it's an actual valid critique that is given, they may make a note of it, but ultimately Nintendo of America is not going to be looking at tweets and going to NCL saying, make new boards for Mario Party. That decision has already been made by NCL in Japan. And I mean, if there was a huge outcry where there were articles and videos and tons of coverage saying we need more boards, we need DLC, then that may spur some discussion. But otherwise, no. It's just social media being social media. And then followed up with a $4 donation. Sorry that I had so many questions, but hey, that just means more money for you guys. And Nate, if you ever reveal your face, you'll get a similar compliment to the one I gave MVG, even if you look like you were kicked in the face by a horse as a kid.
Jesus.
Wow. Is that a... Wow. Wow. Damn. Then I had a $1.69 donation from Mr. Studmuffin. Now, this is a two-part question, so they followed up with an additional $1.69 donation. And they write, Xenoblade Chronicles 3, in my opinion, is Monolith's magnum opus. The amount of care and work that went into this game, amazing story and characters, the fact that we get 6 playable characters on screen always is truly an achievement unto itself. I cannot praise this game enough. If it doesn't get a Game of the Year nomination, I can at least see it getting the Best Soundtrack nomination, because every battle theme is as if the composer was held at ransom and told to make bangers for every track or else.
Have you played Xenoblade 3 yet, Nate?
I have played it for about 10 hours.
What's your thoughts? I haven't played it yet, so I can't really say yes or no to that comment. But I mean, I've heard amazing things about the game.
It's a very good game. It's the best Xenoblade Chronicles game so far, based on what I played. I mean, Xenoblade Chronicles 2 was a game it took me a long time to really get into. It just didn't click with me. This clicked far faster. As for game of the year, I could see it being in the discussion. Right now, my game of the year is still Elden Ring. Mm-hmm. But I could see Xenoblade Chronicles 3 in that discussion, potentially getting some nominations, especially when you look at the year just in terms of releases. It hasn't been an overly heavy year in terms of high quality AAA. So it'll probably get a nod there. I don't think it would dethrone Elden Ring if we're looking at Game Awards from something like the Game Awards. I think Elden Ring would walk out with that victory easily.
Yeah.
Even from, you know, a lot of websites and outlets, I think Elden Ring is ultimately going to be crowned Game of the Year. God of War Ragnarok will obviously be in the discussion as well. But yeah, Xenoblade Chronicles 3 is definitely part of that conversation. God of War will likely enter it if Metroid Prime Remaster makes this year and it, you know, maybe gets in before that window of the Game Awards closes. Maybe it gets up there. As for outlets, I'd be very curious if Prime 1 resonates with people today as well as it did 20 years ago, because Prime 1 is regarded as one of the greatest games of all time and won Game of the Year back in 2020. Was it 2002? So, mm-hmm. Yeah, Xenoblade Chronicles 3 is definitely Monolith Soft's one of their best games to date. And that is the final Streamlabs question for this week. If you'd like to support the channel, we have a Streamlabs link in the description below. Donate any dollar amount, ask a question, we will answer it at the end of the episode. Donate $100 or more, we will dedicate the episode to you. This episode is dedicated to Shamsa. We thank you for your continued support and generosity. And I'd like to thank MVG for joining me as always.
Thank you as always, Nate. It's always fun and it's been a pleasure to be on.
It's always a delight having you. And that concludes this episode of Nate the Hate, where we discuss the marketing failures of Microsoft, Nintendo, and Sony so far in 2022. Be sure to like the video and subscribe. If you haven't, leave a comment in the comment section below letting us know your thoughts on the failures of these companies and which of the three you think failed the most in 2022. And until next time, continue to embrace the hate.